stories, teachings, and guidance. Welcome to the Women's Moon Wisdom Podcast with your host, Rebecca Rankin.
Welcome back to the Women's Moon Wisdom Podcast, where we explore holistic approaches to women's wellness. I'm your host, Rebecca Rankin, and today we have a special guest who specializes in cooking therapy coaching. Please welcome Lexi Greck, a seasoned cooking therapy coach. Thank you so much for being here today with us.
Thank you for having me. It's so wonderful to be included in this podcast. I just love the variety of guests that you have here, and I'm just so honored to be one of them.
Oh, it's so great. So we're going to dive right in today. So cooking therapy, it's such a fascinating concept, right? Blending culinary arts with mental well-being. So I would love for you to share with us a little bit about yourself, just like what your background is, what inspired you to really pursue cooking therapy coaching as a profession. How did this journey all unfold for you?
Oh, it's such a journey. So I'm originally from Malta, tiny little island in the middle of the Mediterranean. And everything in Malta, at least when I was growing up there, it was all about family and family gathers around food. Like, no one will ever come to your house if you're not offering food. It's like a thing. So I grew up there. And then in 2008, I moved to the UK to study advertising and marketing communication. So nothing to do with this as such. And then I started working in the corporate world doing exactly that. I did lots of global PR for big brands, thinking like, you know, I had everything I'd ever dreamed of working for me, until 2015 came along and something in me snapped, and I crumbled. There was just no other way to do it. I was giving a lot to the job. I was getting in terms of experience, but in terms of like the fulfillment, the purpose, it just wasn't there anymore. And, you know, I was giving so much at work, and then I would come home and I'd have nothing left in me. And I was just a totally different person. And the people around me who I love the most just weren't getting the best version of me. And it took me a while from there to make a decision or a different decision. But I took 2016, at the end of 2016, I resigned from the job without a job to go to, which was like mad. But I decided to take a few months off in conjunction with the therapist I was seeing. We thought, okay, I need like a circuit breaker. So I took a few months off in 2017. And as things started calming down, I started feeling like whatever I go on to do next needed to combine two things: cooking or food in some sort of way, and also my desire to make like an impact, a helpful impact in other people's lives. And I had no idea how that would come together. It made absolutely no sense at the time. But I had a friend of mine who was also a therapist who said, you know what, I think you'd be a really good coach. Like, why don't you explore that? So I started exploring, and I came across the Coaching Academy, and I did my coaching diploma. And as I was going through the coaching diploma, my mind started thinking of possibilities, but it just, again, I just couldn't find a way to bring them together. So then in 2020, I think, yes, I did my neurolinguistic programming diploma, and things shifted for me because I could understand how the sense, like the power of the senses, make a huge difference to us. And I mean, cooking is one of the fewest practices that just combines all five senses. It's just one of those things where like we listen to the sounds, we see, we smell, we can taste, we feel texture. So it like lends itself to any sensory exploration really beautifully. And so in 2021, I launched Food and Being, which is my brand. And is, I call it a legacy business. And the reason I call it a legacy business is because this love of food comes from my maternal granddad, my granddad Joe, who I sort of spent a lot of time in the kitchen with growing up. My mom got sick when I was quite young. And so like, I spent a lot of time in his kitchen, and I'm sure he didn't know what he was doing at the time, but he just got me to like process a lot of like big emotions I had zero language for through food. And later on in adulthood, I could see that I was still doing that. I was still going into the kitchen, whatever happened, good things, difficult things, whatever it is, joyous things. And I just would explore them in the kitchen. And so food and being is, yeah, it's his legacy. It's his legacy refined with my professional training now. But it's, you know, food, the actual name food and being is a reflection of what we used to do together in his kitchen, which was literally to cook food and just be. And it wasn't, there was no pressure to be happy, to be this, to be that. It was just being, that was enough. And that is the sort of safe space that I strive to create with my clients and with anyone who crosses their path with me. And yeah, basically now I'm on a mission to create a movement for people to own back the kitchen as a place for connection and core memory creation.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that and sharing your journey. And I love this idea, just that, yeah, cooking is the exploration of all five senses. And it's just this beautiful way, like you said, to process you at a young age, at any age, process like your feelings and emotions without needing to have some certain outcome of being happy or, you know, sad, like any challenges in life, any celebrations in life, using cooking as this tool. Can you explain a little bit more to our listeners, like what cooking therapy coaching entails, and maybe even how it differs from maybe a traditional coaching lens?
Yeah, absolutely. So cooking therapy coaching is everything you'd expect from a therapeutic coaching setting. So therapeutic coaching combines life coaching with neurolinguistic programming and sometimes hypnotherapy. I chose to add grief education to that combination, trauma-informed certification. So it's like, it sort of combines quite a few things together. It differs from traditional therapy in the sense that it's very forward looking. So we only go to the past in order to get the learnings and get the things that we want to take into our present and our future selves. We don't really tend to stop and explore the trauma per se and everything that it could have meant at that point. But all of this, instead of happening in like a therapy room or a studio or an office, it just happens in a kitchen space. So it can happen virtually, it can happen face to face. I think a few cooking therapists or cooking therapy coaches are doing things as workshops as well. And it's essentially the idea that you're working on your nourishment, but in a holistic way. So you're not just working on your nourishment in terms of, you know, like your personal development, you're also working on creating something delicious, which is like physical and tangible. And there's so much. Cooking gives us this ability to, because of the senses and what we were talking about, you know, we store so much through our senses. And so cooking allows us to explore and almost like transition and move through time and memories in a very sensory way, in a very delicious way, might I add, and in a way that gives us this safety, because we're not sitting across from someone looking into their eyes, and so there's less of that pressure. And yeah, we sort of allow ourselves to connect with our unconscious and create more of an open pathway for it to feed us whatever we need to hear or whatever we need to work on.
I love that. I always that brought up this memory, or I feel that the kitchen is always the place where everyone gathers, right? It's like this safe space. It's so comforting. And you saying that, like, it kind of, it's not this face-to-face interaction. It's like this kind of shoulder-to-shoulder interaction, which can kind of feel like a little bit, you know, less intimidating to share. How do you feel that, like, the coaching therapy, like, how is it, like, uniquely beneficial for, say, mental and emotional well-being? Maybe perhaps you've already, like, timed in on that it's like this kind of little bit more less intimidating space. Maybe explore that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's so important because I think the world we live in more and more expects of us to show up in a way that is very fine-tuned all the time, polished, and where we have to, maybe aggressive is the wrong word, but we have to, like, you know, just be there, present, always doing. There always has to be a result to things. And we always have to show up as the best version of ourselves. There's just so many expectations, be it because of social media, because of just the fast pace our world has created. And so I very much like to create a space where there are very few expectations, and I work with the client based on whatever they need. And it's that journey of come as you are and you're free to unmask. It's a space where you can unmask and you can feel everything that the world tells you you shouldn't be feeling, and you can explore it, and you can get angry about it or get happy about it, feel proud, because let's be honest, you know, when it comes to women and what the expectations are, you know, we get to do a lot of things, but God forbid we look or we say we're proud of ourselves, because that's, you know, too showy, too this, too that. So I think this, the kitchen is a very inviting space, and it invites us to be exactly who we are. And to your point, I think there is a beautiful invitation in the kitchen to connect with our intuition. And I'm a very intuitive cook. I look at recipes to get ideas, but I tend to not follow recipes so much. It's different when it comes to baking, because baking is a bit of a science. But
yes, I was cooking, just going to say, unless you're baking.
Yeah. But cooking really gives us that opportunity to just center ourselves and open that channel. And this is something my granddad taught me at a very early age. He never followed recipes, and he used to get me to smell something and taste something and ask me, what does it need, and what do you think we should do next, and how do you interpret this? And I think that's really beautiful, and I would encourage anyone to use the kitchen space to fine-tune their intuition. And, you know, it's something that can start from the shopping experience. Don't have a shopping list. Go into the shops, touch the produce, see what there is, see what inspires you, and allow it to not make sense. Bring it back and just start experimenting. Start smelling the spices. See what inspires you to, like, what flavor profile the products you chose are asking for, and what kind of treatment, and just go with it. Allow yourself to be in the journey and not in the destination. And I think that is, like, one of the best things I can say, because, you know, everyone's like, oh, I bet you make this amazing food and da da da. And of course, I love to cook. I love to experiment on all of that. But in this space, it doesn't matter. It doesn't necessitate you to be an expert, a professional. You know, in a cooking therapy setting, cooking therapy coaching setting, you go there for the journey. You don't go there for the destination. So you're just free to explore. And I mean, I'd invite anyone to just do it in their kitchen, even without engaging with, you know, a coach or a cooking therapist, because It's just one of the most beautiful things that can come out of the kitchen space.
Yes. I love that when you touched on you're guided by your intuition. Like, yes, like what a great place to explore and trust your own intuition when cooking. When I love to cook and I love to bake. And I find myself, I'll read a recipe. I'm like, oh, that, I like that, but I'm going to add this and this. Then, you know, like you, when you get to know the flavors and you get to know these things, you know how they work together. You know how, oh, maybe if you add one thing more than the other. And it is like this practice of trusting your own intuition. And how helpful is that, like as a practice, to then take out of the kitchen and other areas in your life and basically learning self-trust, like learning like a little bit deeper about yourself, like ways that you can trust that you, this will make sense eventually.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, the good thing, especially when it comes to cooking, is in the midst of the process, you can taste and you can fine tune, add more, maybe not reduce, but you can add other things to compensate. And I think a lot of us tend to forget to do that when we're cooking because we're so focused on the result. And so, because like, it's just having to put dinner out or having to make sure it's there. And so it's like, let's just get it all together. And we don't stop to like taste. We don't stop to check. And I think creating that time in a kitchen space is a really good way to start practicing creating that time in our life to stop and check.
Yes. I mean, that's just go, I feel like on this podcast, we talk about this a lot, is that, you know, we're so ingrained to be goal driven, to be end result driven, to be, you know, our productivity, you know, our narrow focus. And yet the reminder is always pause, pause, be, just be. Right, your food and being, right? Part of it, you don't have to be a certain way. You can just be who you are, be in this moment, taste it along the way, taste, add, see what comes of it. Oh, that's such a great thing. And I'm kind of curious, like any advice that you may have. So I feel like so many of us women, like we're constantly juggling, we're doing all the things. And you kind of touched on this about just some of us, like, we just got to get dinner on the table. Right? Mm-hmm. I just got to get dinner on the table. How do you feel that, how do you recommend or give advice for women who could use this type of coaching to reconnect with themselves, to find a greater balance in such a busy life?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And just to like a point you made beforehand, just to close off that bit, it's, you know, when we stop to taste, we get the opportunity to make a choice. And I think if we can learn a little bit about that and take that, like the more we practice it in the kitchen, doing something, you know, that we do on a day-to-day basis, the more ingrained, like, and the key thing is adding intentionality to all of this. When we actually observe ourselves stopping to taste and creating that space to make a different choice, that is the magic there.
Yes. Oh, I just want to pause. Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. I just got like full body chills. I'm like, yes. When you pause to taste, you get to make a choice. Yes.
I'm my own first client. So I say these things because these are things I practice, and it's a practice. It is not like a destination. It's not, I know we keep coming up or back to this, but it's honestly a practice. We have to constantly practice because we are constantly changing. And so therefore it just gives us, you know, I call it my test kitchen because it's like you test things in terms of recipe, but you also test things in terms of behavior. Which leads me really nicely to what you're talking about, because, you know, cooking, and I think it's very much like a mindset thing of, you know, having to deliver something, and I'm I'm not saying that I'm here to change any of that. We're too busy to make a massive change for like in our everyday life. So I always advocate for choosing at least like one time in the week, at least one opportunity where you know you've got the time to really allow that to be, to mean something different to the rest of the week. And I always encourage, you know, if you're part of a larger family, then open the invitation, make it family time. But even if it's just for yourself, make it me time. And, you know, in it, there's the nourishment that we discussed. There's also the nurturing, like, primal instinct that is within us. And of course, I'm not talking about every woman having every level of nurturing, you know, being the same, but it is somewhere there. And like, even if it's not for others, we get to nurture ourselves. And then obviously there's the sustenance. And I think my favorite is the resilience that is built inside the kitchen space. So I was exploring a little bit of this. Do we have time for me to say a story?
Yes, of course we do.
Yeah, perfect. So to give a little bit of context, I lost my mom in the last 15 months. So December 2022, just 10 days before Christmas, my mom passed away quite unexpectedly. And my mom was my everything. I mean, we were very different people, but she was just, yeah, we were just really tied together, really close. We lived in different countries, but we were just connected. And in the last 2 weeks, I had to go back home. My father's moving house. And so the dreaded task of going through her things and choosing what to keep and what to give away happened. And I decided to organize a family get together around this, where her sibling invited her siblings and some of my cousins, and basically to come to the house and to see all of her things and to pick the things they wanted so everyone could have something. And of course, I chose to cook for everyone. But the night before, something in me snapped, and I just had this, I don't know even what got into me. I never even had that reaction when she actually passed away. It was just out of body. Like the pain I felt, as my heart has never felt anything like it. And I just could not understand how I was going to get from that place to even hosting the next day or even moving further on in my life. And I stayed in that moment. I felt it all. And I think the neighbors might have heard me as well, to be honest. It was a very visceral reaction to it all. Because loss is very primal, and it undresses us and it makes us completely raw to it all. And then I went to bed, and the next morning I woke up and I went into the kitchen and I just eased myself into the day, and it was just so beautiful. I was just cooking and just going with the motions of what I wanted to create. And as I was doing this, I had the time to reflect on the resilience it took to come from the Friday evening to the Saturday morning and do all of that. And I was thinking, resilience is not about not getting to the depths, like not getting to rock bottom. Resilience is about how we come back from rock bottom. And to me, that meant the main ingredient is elasticity. There's like this elasticity where you go and then you're able to come back from it. And as I was reflecting on it, I realized that a lot of the elasticity that I practice in my life comes from the creativity of being in the kitchen, because the creative nature of being in the kitchen means you have this like range of resources and you get to pick and mix how you use them. And it's a bit like within us, right? When we hit rock bottom, we have an array of resources some more accessible than others. And we get to pick and mix and try and find the perfect recipe to rise from rock bottom and to create that elasticity to come back. So I think that is one of the main things I would say, that yes, you're busy, you know, yes, it's tough, but create that space for yourself. You deserve to explore, you know, your resilience, your strength, your own recipe for elasticity, and you get to play. You get to play.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm like all teary-eyed now. Thank you. You embody all of this. Like you're thank you. I feel that resilience, like I just love that example of like how the kitchen, how cooking, how that can really lend itself to, it's like the saying, as above, so below, you know, like it's in you. And you can see, like, in the kitchen making meals and in a nourishing and an intentionality woven into the experience is this practice of resilience and moving with grief, you know, like grief is it's fluid and having. And so is cooking, you know, and it's like,
exactly,
it's, they go hand in hand. So I can see how this is just such a beautiful full tool for you, for all of us to lean into. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm so sorry to hear of your mother's passing too. Yeah. To shift gears a little bit. So kind of speaking about family, about connection, and food has just like this profound connection to our identity, to our family, our ancestral identity, to our cultures. How do you feel that cooking therapy coaching honors this and kind of leverages this connection to help promote self-healing and promote even self-discovery?
I think it's so beautiful for the reason I mentioned, this ability to sort of like time travel through cooking. I mean, the whole idea that recipes get passed on through generations, and like you get to, I say this and sometimes people like just have to question, but I'm going to say it and let's see how it lands.
Yeah.
You get to meet people you never meet in a kitchen space, because the most beautiful thing is when a recipe is passed down and you take the time to make it, it doesn't matter whether the person who created it is in the room or not. You're tasting the same food that they tasted. And that is a connection. That is a connection. They are there. And I constantly talk about the kitchen space being like an invitation. And I love this because, you know, we talk about an invitation to dinner, but the whole space is an invitation, because we invite that exploration of generations, of our roots. You know, we can, for example, you know, I live in the UK. I've lived in the UK since 2008, but I cook a lot of food that comes, that connects me right back to my roots. And every time I cook it, I'm there. You know, it's that meal I had with my family. It's the dish that I loved that my granddad made. And the best thing about it is we also get the creative license to add a twist. And that twist is a representation of our reality. So there might be a dish that used to be cooked in a certain way, but now there's new technology that allows us to cook it in a different way. Now there's a dietary requirement that needs to be addressed. And we get to make our mark in those generations by changing it up, for it to fit us and for it to reflect us at this moment in time. And I think it's just so beautiful. And to connect it back to grief, because I do a lot of this work, especially since after I got my certification last year, I always talk about inviting our departed loved ones to the table by cooking something they used to cook or by cooking something they used to love. And it opens up the conversation and the thoughts to them and the memories they created for us. But moreover, it allows us to access that nourishment that they gave us. Even if they're not here anymore, we can still access that love that they put into the dish, the nourishment that they put into the dish, by creating that recipe for ourselves. And it's just, I think it's just so, it's a beautiful way of exploring culture, identity, and like the whole legacy. All of that.
Oh, I'm teary-eyed again, because I love that even as a tool for helping process grief, that, you know, creating a recipe that, you know, your loved one would make in the kitchen or even enjoyed eating, as this, you know, connection to the nourishing and comforting energy of them, and inviting them to the table. I'm teary-eyed, because I think of my loved ones and the recipes that I cook, and thinking it, just having that intention behind it makes it so profound and so powerful. I really hope all of our listeners get that too, that is just a beautiful tool to feel like they're not gone, you know, like they're still here, like they're in something, like making a dish that they would make, you know, the recipes of theirs, going through their recipe books or whatever, just to connect with them in that way and have it like nourish you on the energetic kind of emotional way, but also like physically nourish you. Like, oh, thank you so much. Oh, I didn't expect to be like so teary-eyed today.
No, I'm also like trying to, but I'll give you this idea that I always have when I'm cooking something my mom used to make, or my granddad and other family members, but they're sort of the two I tend to celebrate the most in the kitchen and cook the most. I always feel like they're hovering somewhere above, and I have this like vision of, you know, a slightly darkened room, maybe with like the light of the sort of the oven top on, and me stirring the pot and all of these aromas and sounds and all of these things that they've heard so many times before. It's like they're calling them there. And then it just feels as if they are present and really they're enjoying their creation being made, sometimes in a different way, but always in ode and in honor to them. And I put out a series just before Christmas around grief and how we bring together festive joy and grief, which is like such a difficult thing to juggle. And I always say, you know, if you're able to have a seat for your loved one, like someone who comes to the table, usually who isn't here anymore, have a seat for them, put like the photo there, set the table for them. And it's like an energetic space for them to fill. And I think it was probably one of the things that I got the biggest response about from people who had just lost someone, who were really struggling to really find a way to combine them. Because I think sometimes after loss, celebrating anything can feel really jarring, and sometimes there's guilt around like, why am I enjoying things when I, you know, I shouldn't, and all of that. And I think even creating that physical space, and it doesn't have to be Christmas, it doesn't have to be Thanksgiving or any other holiday, it can be just a dinner that they used to cook that, you know, they would enjoy. Just create that physical space at the table and allow them to fill it in energetically. And I think it's really beautiful.
Oh, thanks for sharing that. I think so many of us will resonate with that. And perhaps even put it into practice, I think that is, that feels already like so nourishing on my heart. So thank you for that so much. So many good gems here. Do you, to shift gears a little bit, kind of going back to this concept of us not carving out the time. I like the idea that you had reflected on in those of us who get caught up in the I'm too busy mindset of like picking one day, you know, one day a week where like you're fully present in the kitchen and, you know, trusting your intuition and you're really cooking with intentionality. What do you find in your experience are some other common like challenges or barriers that that people and women face when just incorporating cooking as a self-care routine? And how do you allow people to kind of overcome that barrier?
Yeah, I think it's very much a mindset thing. And I think it's honestly being totally like raw and transparent. It's probably one of the biggest challenge us as a community of cooking therapists and cooking therapy coaches and baking therapists are facing right now. And one that we're very much collaborating, the ones who have found each other anyway, collaborating on, because cooking is very much viewed as a chore. So for example, if I had to mention art therapy or dance therapy, those things are already associated with being hobbies. Whereas cooking, there's a little bit of like an additional hurdle because it's like something we are expected to do on a day-to-day basis. And I think there are quite a few things that take away from that joy. Like for example, you know, having to consider everyone else's likes and dislikes and if you've got kids and they're picky eaters and the lack of appreciation sometimes as well, you know, you take an hour and a half, 2 hours to make dinner and it just disappears within 15 minutes and everyone's off from the table and you're left there thinking, goodness me, I've put so much heart and soul into that and where is the recognition?
Yeah.
So I would say there are a few things. So one of the things that I'll actually give you after a call to make available for your wonderful listeners is a set of cooking affirmations that we can look through before we go into the kitchen space. And I think it's a bit like your favorite pair of jeans. You know, you wear it every day, but you find a way to dress it up, to dress it down, to make it fit. And so, you know, depending on the occasion, you style it. And so the kitchen is a bit the same. You can use it as a chore, but there are times when, you know, if you read through these affirmations and then maybe create your own, you shift that mindset and you approach it in a different way. It is, I'll continue to say it, it's a practice. It's not something that if you've not been accustomed to doing, you'll immediately after listening to this conversation do and find easy. It is a practice. But I think it allows us to start viewing things from a place of worthiness, a place of like, I deserve to nourish myself. And then I want to, with that nourishment, nourish others. It's like the cup is overflowing and now I get to share it. And I want to just say something as well about this appreciation thing, because I think it's something that I encounter quite a lot. And I always say, it's an opportunity to set a boundary. And that boundary is gratitude. So if you start showing that when you sit down, you're taking a moment to really appreciate and you're like, oh, goodness me, today the food tastes really... And I know, it might sound jarring that you're saying it about your own food, but hear me out. You start saying it and other people will start raising their own awareness to notice things about the food. And you can even say, hey, you know, before saying something, you know, like giving me some criticism about this dish, can you tell me something that you really enjoyed or that you really appreciated? And if it's not about the food, can it be about the time I've just spent and dedicated to try and come up with something? Like, we're allowed to ask for what we need. It seems to be something that got lost at some point, especially when it comes to us women, that we just have forgotten to give ourselves permission to ask for what we need. And we're allowed to say, I really appreciate your feedback. I'll take that into consideration. Can you also tell me what you appreciate and what you like about this? Or, you know, what it is that you appreciate about me doing this for you? And like that question will make other people think. It's just, again, stopping and thinking and considering a different scenario. And hopefully, as we start shifting that experience, our own desire to spend more time in the kitchen space will increase and change and shift. So I think that would be one of my biggest things to say, really.
Yes. Oh, that is such a great tip. And I think it's like a life lesson that so many of us needed to hear, is that we're allowed to ask for what we need. Like, I mean, that can go across, that does not just apply to the kitchen. This applies to our whole life. And what better way to practice it in the kitchen and then get better at asking for other areas in your life. And that's a practice that we've done with our kids, is before every meal, we, you know, say what we're grateful for. And lots of times it ends up being, because I do the majority of the cooking and baking at our house. Honestly, it's not for lack of it's not like a gender thing. It's really like, my husband is his idea of cooking, like he'll make lentils and it'll just be like lentils with like no spices. And he's like, well, I'll put a little olive oil on it. I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, let me. And it's,
yeah.
Then he's like, okay with that, like as a meal. And I'm like, no, I need some depth of flavors here. So, but anyways, that idea of when we hear, because I have been in that position. I'm sure so many of our listeners have been in that position where you've like, you spent all this time making this meal and you're like, oh, it's gonna be so good, so good. And especially if you have little ones, they speak their opinion and they're like, I don't like curry. I don't like whatever it is. And you're like, oh, you liked it last week. But then it's asking for what you need, right? Is like, okay, well, tell me something you do. What do you appreciate about this meal? And I love that. I love that. Oh, that is such a great way.
Because really, they are asking for what they need, right? When they give you the criticism or when they say, you know, I need this to be, you know, saltier or whatever it is. Like, they are vocalizing their needs. And so, hey, we get a space to vocalize our needs too.
Yes. Oh, that's so good. Yes. Yeah. Kids are really great about vocalizing with their needs.
Goodness me.
Yeah. I would love to hear, would you care to share a memorable experience from your work? I would love to hear just a memorable experience story, success story.
Yeah. So I always think that in terms of like whatever my clients or the people I work with achieve, that's their success and it's not my success, and it's their story to share, not my story to share. I always talk about me being, you know, side by side with them on a journey, but it's their journey. So for me, the biggest success and just most memorable experiences across the boards when people tell me how safe they feel to open up to me. I think there is no greater compliment for me. I had one client, I think at the end of last year, who I was coaching online, and she said to me, your approach is so radical. And it really stayed with me because I absolutely love that. My approach is radical, radically compassionate, like all embracing of the messiness and the complexity of being human. And honestly, I think that's when it felt like I had the confirmation that what I was doing was so authentically me, because there is absolutely nothing else that's radical about my approach. I am not, and I do not subscribe to the coaching techniques where you're forcing people, where you're pushing and pushing and pushing, where you're looking at achievement and productivity. I just don't. I'm sure they're effective, and I'm sure they're, for some people, they're the best thing that ever happened to them. I just, that's not my school of thought. So the fact that the radical compassion and the warmth and the allowance for her to be exactly who she is, and, you know, she talked a lot about things she wasn't proud of in her past, and the fact that the space allowed for us to bring them along with the journey and find a way to be grateful for that time, because it's part of her story. It's not something that there should be like shame about, or you know, that should be hidden. It's part of that story. It's an ingredient for the person she is now. And I think that's probably one that's always there in my head, whatever I do. Just in my head, I'm like, yes, be radical, be radically compassionate, go over and above what you think is compassionate, and just go for it and do it and be it.
And that is what the world needs right now. Radically compassionate people. Oh, yes. How do you see the field of cooking therapy coaching evolving, right, in the future, even in the lens of women's wellness?
You know, it's a field that is very much in its like newborn stage. There is so much potential, which is like one of the most exciting things about it. There is also all of these like hurdles that we have to jump through, or challenges that we have to just talk about. And, you know, opportunities like this with you creating this beautiful empathetic space to talk, it's just one of the ways we can get the word out there why it's so beautiful to engage in this kind of thing. And, you know, I think over the years there's been a bit of a shift from cooking being regarded almost like reverently as someone who's like, you know, even in like tribes and families that, you know, like large families where there was that one person who cooked. And then somehow along the way, there was like shame attached to being in the kitchen space. It was almost viewed as it's like submissive. I mean, looking back like to a few minutes ago, you felt like you had to clarify it. You do most of the cooking, not because of a gender thing.
Yes.
It's, you know, because it's like people are like, women in the kitchen, like some, you know, it's being used as an insult these days. It's like, go back to your kitchen. And I'm just like, So I feel like this field has a chance to stand up and create pride again for being in the kitchen, because it's a choice. And I think there's so much power in that. It's reframing the notion that we can say, you know, yes, being in the kitchen is powerful. Being in the kitchen allows us to nourish ourselves and those around us. And it allows us to connect to that nurturing nature and to inspire us and to be our most creative selves. And we deserve to stay and play, because there's so much play in the kitchen. And it's just so beautiful to connect that back to our inner child and bring our inner child along with us. You know, we lose that sense of play in our life, and the kitchen is like a playground, quite literally, for our senses, for, you know, all of that. And so I think more and more people will start seeing the benefits of that, and more as we talk about this reframe and this perspective, I think people will feel a lot more confident about owning back the kitchen as a place for personal growth and self-betterment and all of that.
Absolutely. And you're spot on with play. I mean, we all need more play in our life. And what a better playground than in your kitchen, something that you have to do, you're doing every day anyways. Why not make it fun? You know,
absolutely.
Even if you have to get dinner on the table by 5:30 or whatever, you know, but darn it, you can make it fun.
For sure. Absolutely. I'm there with you.
Now, this conversation's been so, so amazing. I didn't expect to have so many teary-eyed moments. What's one last thing that you want to share with our listeners that maybe we haven't touched on yet, to anyone who's on their wellness journey?
You know, firstly, I want to say to anyone who is like working on being a better version of themselves or the version of themselves they desire to be, whatever that looks like, that you are so brave. Like, it is such a rebellious act to stop and make a choice to do something differently. And like, I just want to take the time to acknowledge that and say that I see you breaking cycles. I see you fighting old habits. I see you putting so much love and effort into doing things differently and being who you're meant to be. And I think I want to remind them that working on our wellness journey is just not a linear trajectory. It doesn't always look like, you know, going up like a graph kind of thing. You know, we don't have to be productive all the time. We get to give ourselves permission to rest, because rest is something we need. It's restorative. And so we get to fill our cups. We deserve good food and joy and pleasure. And our wellness journey in its own right means we get to feel good along the way. We don't focus on a destination where we feel good when we get to it. It's a wellness journey, and therefore we get to feel good along the way. And I think that's really important. So, you know, wellness is not a destination, it's a lifestyle. I want to just mention that, because this is why it's sustainable, right? And so I think whatever lights you up, just do more of it. So much more of it, and absolutely be kind to others and extend that kindness to yourself, and the grace that you would extend to your best friend, your family, your all of that, because I think that's what gives us this elasticity, this resilience to just keep going gently and steadily on our journey.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much. And it's just like the reminder to pause and taste.
Yes.
To taste and make a choice. Oh, Lexi, thank you so, so much for being here, for sharing your wisdom, your insights, and your expertise with all of us today. I'm going to, in the show notes, there will be all of your information on there, and for the listeners to connect with you and to learn you. More about you. Thank you so much. It's just been such an enlightening conversation.
And thank you for creating just this most beautiful space where, you know, stories are acknowledged, and you also are there. You're so present and you're so feeling of everything that's happening. And I think it's such a privilege to be part of that, to have that sort of like feedback to something you're saying. And yeah, kudos to you, because that's just really appreciated by me, and I'm sure by all your guests and listeners. And keep doing all of this great work.
Oh, thank you so, so much. And to all of our listeners, remember to nourish yourself, not just your body, but your soul. Until next time, be well and take care.